Beginning with just a quick review of last week in the church calendar, I want to throw that up. And I guess before I get there, let me just say this. Chad talks about church disciplines and this intrigue and enjoyment of reading the church fathers that is a part of my life and faith. But I'll tell you, for me, like where I was a few years ago, after having been through seminary and after having, you know, been a part of the church for a long time, I just found that I needed something more to hold on to. I just found that I felt like I had experienced and had really understood all that was being given to me through our typical kind of evangelical church experience. And I kind of came to this point where I was like, I know there's more. Like, I know there's more to this faith than just where I'm at and just what I'm getting. And so that led me, I'm a very curious guy. I tend to be more curious than cautious. That led me to start looking into and seeking the different areas of the church and kind of looking at our brothers and sisters in different denominations who also proclaim that through Christ's death and resurrection that we get to experience life. And so as I started to experience those other corners of the church, I started to realize that there's more of a history here than and there's more robust faith that can be offered. And there is a way to experience these things and dive into them without it being like life-taking and without it being so rigid that it just takes all our energy or sucks the joy out of it. So really that's what it was for me, okay? I was just at a point where I was like, I know there's more, and I just started digging in. And it's got me excited and I've experienced different parts, different deeper levels of our faith that we're able to access. So anyway, all that to say, here's the church calendar. We talked about this last week. And just a quick review of a couple big points from last week in case you weren't here. Number one, our understanding of time is tied to our culture. Our understanding of time is tied to our culture, as is our calendar, right? Our calendars are what help form us and shape us into good Americans, good Chinese people, good Cherokee people. I talked about that. They're the tools that we use to experience time, right? But also that our calendars aren't simply something that we do, they're something that does something to us. And so in this way, again, like our American calendars help form and shape us into good Americans. And I said by celebrating our heroes and commemorating our stories, they form and shape us into citizens of that nation, right? And so that's why we're looking at the church calendar, or what's called the Christian calendar, or the liturgical year, is because part of what it means for us to be Christians, there's as we attach ourselves and start to understand time in kind of Jesus's perspective and tied to his story, then what we find is the church calendar, the church's understanding of time, can help form and shape us into citizens of Christ, into citizens of the Christian nation, I guess. I don't like that word, but. So here we are. We're at this place in the calendar called Epiphany. And during Epiphany, this is the last Sunday of Epiphany. During the space of Epiphany, we celebrate the Magi who came to Jesus's birth. And we celebrate things like Jesus's baptism, right? But as we look ahead, what we see is that Easter is coming. And that's the part of the church calendar that we're all familiar with, that we all get, that we all know. But on the church calendar, it's not just a blip on the map. It's not just a day. For 7 weeks, we celebrate Easter. We spend 7 weeks of the year celebrating Easter on the church calendar. Like, and think about that. Like, that sounds like almost exhausting, right? When we think of what we do for Easter, but just think about it. With Easter comes new life, right? That's essentially where we get the name of our community here, is new life. And it's not just new life, it's the unity of people from all over the globe. Throughout all of history, they like coming together. And restoration of things that have been torn down. and things that were meant to give us life and reconciliation, right? Between us as humans and between us and our Creator, hope, and especially joy. And these are all promises of Easter, right? And so, of course, we should celebrate these things for 7 weeks, right? I mean, more than just a day, more than just a blip on the map. We get to, on the church calendar, celebrate Easter for an entire season. But one thing I love about the church fathers is the wisdom that they offer us. And so think to yourself, just when was the last time you had a 7 week event or 7 week something? Like, I was trying to think about that. Like, maybe a semester of school is 9 weeks, right? I don't know what else. But my mind keeps going to vacation, but I've never taken a 7 week vacation. Like, I don't even know what that would be like. It would be a sabbatical, right? I guess. And pastors are the only ones that get them. But 7 weeks, if we were going to do anything for 7 weeks, wouldn't it be wise? Wouldn't it make sense to prepare for that? Like, shouldn't we posture ourselves in such a way that we can be prepared to experience everything that 7 weeks has to offer? And especially something with the gravity of Easter and the resurrection, the hope and the joy that comes with it. So that's where we get Lent. That's what the wisdom of the church father says, is we have to prepare for Easter. And so I want to tell you, my wife and I just moved. Just a couple weeks ago, we just moved into a new house. And by now, after 11 and a half years of marriage, I know my wife, and I know the differences between us. And I knew, because this was our second time we moved, I had a feeling there was going to be a dynamic that happened. And sure enough, it happened. My wife tends to be a person that doesn't hold on to things. She doesn't collect things, right? And so we experience what I've now called the purge of 2018. So, and truly, like, my wife and I are different, and it's not that, like, I like to hold on to the stuff just because it's stuff. Like, to me, all the stuff is tied to memories and experiences that I've had, and those memories and experiences I've had are tied to people, and you know, a lot of this stuff, like, conjures up and brings back the stories of that time when, whatever it was, you know? And so for me, like, I have a tendency just to hold on to things a little bit more. I'm not a hoarder, but I just have a tendency to collect things more, but my wife just doesn't. And so I knew this was happening. I knew this was going to happen as we started packing boxes. And I, like, in my infinite wisdom of the church fathers, I pulled away and I just, like, Jesus kind of gave me a pep talk and just said, Fleet, like, it's not worth fighting over. You know, like, you know, stick your stake, take your ground on the things that matter the most, and just remember that it's just stuff, you know? And that's why I give you memory and photos and all that stuff. So anyway, so in the midst of the move, you know, there were a lot of things in our house, a lot of corners in a lot of rooms that had stuff in them that at once, like, were either very practical, like we needed them for a certain project or something that we were doing, or they were a part of, like, our story at that time, right? And so we had, you know, gotten these things, you know, and found a place in our house for them. But now we're moving, and my wife wants to get rid of all of it, right? She's just like, you know, it's that old rule, like, if you haven't used it in a year, you should get rid of it. And I think there's wisdom in that for sure. But sometimes, though, I think things go missing around the house. And I'm like, you pitched it, didn't you? You know, like, there's deep suspicion with my wife. We're in love. It's great. But here's the thing. We both knew that as we were moving in to this new season in this new house, and all the dreams that are coming with this new house, a bigger space, we're looking forward to kids hopefully soon. We're looking forward to being able to host community gatherings and do more hospitality, invest in our new neighbors, all these things. As we're dreaming about this new house, my wife, in her infinite wisdom, knows that it might be time to let some things go. That at one point those things had a good place in our lives, but it might be time to surrender them, to let them go, right? And this was magnified by the fact that in November, my grandfather died. And so Kelsey and I spent an afternoon in his house, him and my grandma's house, and my grandma's in the retirement home now, just helping to clean stuff out. And they weren't hoarders either. You know, they weren't collectors of a ton of things, but man, we were in there, and they had been married for 50 years. And so they had 50 years of stuff, you know? And we both kind of looked at each other and said, man, when we get to this age, we don't want to just be holding on to this stuff. We want to know when it's time to let things go. We want to know when it's time to get rid of things, when things that once were valuable and had a place in our life, that it's time to release them, surrender them, give them up, and move on. One more quick story, and then we'll move on. One of the things we say in our friend group is too much birthday. And I want to encourage all of you to start adopting this saying because it's the best ever. But too much birthday. So at our church, we have this family, this couple, the Wigdahls. We love them a lot. And they have this kid. His name's Charlie. We call him Sir Charles. And he's one of the coolest kids I've ever met. He's like 4 or 5, I think. Now he's probably 6. I don't know. But Sir Charles is awesome. And one day, one of my buddies was asking him about his birthday party. And he said, Charlie, you know, how did it go? Did you enjoy it? And he was like, yeah, it was great. And had a lot of fun. And he asked him, did you eat cake? And Sir Charles grabs his tummy and he looked at him and he said, oh, too much birthday. And apparently, you know, it wasn't just a little slice of cake. Apparently, he had way too much cake. And it gave him a tummy ache for, you know, the next 24 hours or something. He must eat a lot of cake. Anyway, so too much birthday. Right? Things finding imbalance in our lives. Things that are once good and find that we find helpful that, again, find themselves off balance in our lives. I think in our spiritual lives, it's easy to get caught up in the excitement of Easter. But we have to be honest that the reason the tomb meant what it did was because the cross meant what it did. And that was death. And that's kind of the hard part of what it means to follow Jesus, is that, like, death is a very serious and honest conversation that we have regularly, often. And it's a part of our story. It's a part of Jesus' story. But death is something that we take very seriously. So Lent is the season that we go, you know what, we want to carve out some time in the year where we think about death. We think about the things that have become misoriented in our lives, the things in our lives that once gave us life, or the things in our lives that we were allowed to experience them in freedom, but perhaps we've experienced too much birthday with them, right? And a lot of times, there's a lot of names we call these things, right? We call them sin. But it's not just sin with all the baggage that comes with saying that word. It's the darkness in the world, right? It's the evil that exists out there that when we look in the mirror, if we're honest, we know is also a part of us, is a part of our hearts and who we are, right? And so Lent is kind of the season where we look sin in the face, darkness in the face, and we're honest about it. And so this is kind of a hard sermon to give, and it's kind of a hard season to even live. But again, the beauty of the church calendar is that everything is in balance. And there's a specific time and place where we address these things and talk about them, and we live the rest of the year in the wake of Easter. Does that make sense? And so a couple things I want to address before we dive into the scriptures. When we start talking about sin or death, darkness in each of us, there's two temptations that all of us tend to face. There's two temptations. Number one is that it's on us to fix the sin, right? And all of a sudden, the gospel becomes a gospel of sin management. And you guys know this, or I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard this. This is the one reason why a lot of people hate going to church, is they feel like they're just going to be yelled at and told that they need to fix themselves and deal with their sin and deal with the darkness. And if it was just that easy, then of course we all would, right? But that's not the gospel. It's not the gospel. It's the gospel of sin management, maybe at best. So on one hand, we have the gospel of sin management as a temptation as we start looking at sin and evil and darkness in the world. On the other hand, though, we have the temptation to ignore it. There's a lot of terrible things happening in this world. And even as I say that, things are coming into your mind, right? I mean, think of all the refugee camps that are happening. You know, think of, I mean, even just some of the stuff that's happening around Wichita. And if we're honest, the same things that those people wrestle with, whether it's hatred for another people, like maybe it's not hatred in us, but maybe it's anger that's been deep-seated and frustrated that's been sitting there so long that, yeah, like we just want to knock the tar out of that person, you know? That's not much different than the country that declares war on another country across the globe. And so it's easy for us to just go, nope, I'm not going to deal with it, right? Nope, I don't want to look at it. Nope, I don't want to be honest about it. And I think both of these are not only, both of these are just unhelpful postures for our spiritual lives as we think about and talk about death. As we think about and talk about sin. And I would say this, neither one of these lead to the life and freedom that Jesus promises us. Legalism drains us of joy. Pretending to be ignorant is dishonest. So what are we to do? What are we to do? I think one thing I've learned over the years is that we can't trust ourselves to deal with our own darkness. I can't trust myself to deal with my own sin. My motives aren't selfless enough to keep my evil at bay. That tends to be true for most of us. And so I guess as we continue down this road, I want to be clear about what I'm saying. I'm not saying Lent is this season where we attack all of our sin and where we deal with it. Again, that's not what the Christian walk is about. The Christian walk is about looking at Jesus. It's about following Jesus. And knowing that along the way, there's going to be times where he calls us to the table to eat and drink and celebrate and be with our friends, but also to know that as we follow Jesus, there are times where he leads us into the wilderness and into the desert. And both of those happen in the life of Christ. And so this is where we find ourselves. Our answer to these temptations is Lent. It's 40 days of following Jesus into that desert. And so here's where we find the scripture from Matthew 4, 1 through 11. And here's what it says. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted there by the devil. Even Jesus was tempted. For 40 days and 40 nights he fasted and became very hungry. During that time the devil came to him and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become loaves of bread." But Jesus told him, "No, the scriptures say people do not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to the holy city, Jerusalem, to the highest point of the temple. And he said, "If you are the Son of God, jump off, for the scriptures say he will order his angels to protect you, and they will hold you up with their hands, so you won't even hurt your foot on a stone." But of course, Jesus in his infinite divinity says the scriptures also say you must not test the Lord your God. And finally, the devil took him to the peak of a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. "I will give it to you," he said, "if you will kneel down and worship me." To which Jesus responded, "Get out of here, Satan. For the scriptures say you must not worship the Lord your God and serve only him." Then the devil went away and the angels came and took care of Jesus. In some translations it said, and the angels came and fed Jesus. And so this is where we are headed as we enter the season of Lent. We are headed into the desert, and we're headed into the wilderness. We're headed into certain temptations that may or may not be present in our lives. But we are headed there not because the desert and the wilderness is our focus. We are headed there because Jesus is our focus and we're following him. And so Lent is the season where we face the parts of our lives that look like barren wastelands. And to be honest with ourselves about the fact that the darkness that's in our world is also in us. And so for 40 days, we ask Jesus to be honest with us about the evil in our hearts, the idols in our lives, the sins in our souls. I love this quote, and you'll see this probably on the webpage and in other places, but this is probably one of the best descriptions of Lent. It says this, Lent is a season to slowly prepare our souls. It is a time to open ourselves to the presence of God in our lives and to let the angels feed us. It is a time to sit among the ashes, confident that love will abound in due time. It is a time to be washed by our tears into the water of new life, to come to real transformation and newness, ready to celebrate the feast that is given to us at Easter. That's such a good description. So Lent, for 40 days, we follow Jesus into the wilderness. And as soon as we start talking about Lent, we start talking about fasting. Like a lot of people know, like even non-church people and people that haven't been around church for a while know that you start talking about Lent and you start talking about fasting. Everybody always wants to go to fasting. But it's easy to forget that the fast, just like the Bible and just like the calendar itself, ultimately exists to point to something greater than itself, which is the feasting. And again, it's here that we find the balance of the church fathers and the church calendar. So here's what fasting is. So fasting is the term that we use for self-denial, essentially. It's the term that we use to open ourselves up, to provide extra room and extra space in our hearts and in our souls and in our lives so that there might be extra room for Jesus to come and speak to us. Right? And so in this way, as we give up something, we give it up anticipating and with a hopefulness that in the openness of our hands, that Jesus will provide great spiritual growth and a closeness and perhaps an intimacy with him, that he'll provide us with guidance along the way. It's feasting, but it's fasting, and both kind of go hand in hand. Like, think about it. Jesus said he's the bread of life. Jesus is the living water, right? And so as we give up these things like food or technology, Facebook, whatever it is, we give those things up. A lot of times it's pretty common for us to take on practices that, again, we're not earning anything from Jesus. We're not trying to earn our way to God through this. What we're doing is just simply trying to get rid of the clutter, to be honest with ourselves, that we've had too much birthday in certain areas of our life, right? to get rid of some of the junk that, again, doesn't fit in our lives. Or perhaps maybe it's become overbearing in our lives, right? And this is a lot of things. Like, I love to have a pint with friends. I love that. But I've also been a lot of alcoholics where that pint rules their life, you know? And alcohol is like an easy go-to. Like, right, it's one of the top 10 that pastors always use. But it's not just alcohol. Like, even as a pastor, when our ministry was growing a few years ago, like, I found myself, like, all of a sudden, the people that I was serving, and I love these people, I cared about them a lot, but all of a sudden, like, bringing more people into the ministry, which is a great thing, the ministry was given life, all of a sudden, like, I started wrestling with pride about how much it was growing, right? Again, it found its imbalance inside of my life because I was focused on the wrong thing. Does that make sense? Like, even something as pure as, like, helping others meet Jesus and helping them follow him finds its imbalance. And so it's good, like, it's good to hold those things out and ask Jesus to tend to them. And so as we enter Lent, everybody's invited to fast, to surrender something or some things that perhaps have found their imbalance in your life. So what is it for you? What was once life-giving? What was once helpful? What was once something that was part of your life that maybe has found its imbalance? That maybe has taken over a little too much? Good example of this is not a problem for me to have a motorcycle, but it is a problem when I start spending more time on the motorcycle in the springtime when it gets beautiful outside than with my wife, you know, like, and I have to like let it find its space. So what would it be for you if you were to spend 40 days releasing something, surrendering something? What would it be? Technology? Would it be caffeine? Like some of us? Holy cow, that's on my list this year. If I don't drink a cup of coffee in the morning, I am a bear. A very small bear, I get, but but an angry, you know, South Pole elf. I get to be pretty, and I get headaches, and I get frustrated, and I'm easily irritated, and isn't that a sign that something has found imbalance in our life? Like, physiologically, there's something wrong here. And if that's what gets me up in the morning, maybe it would be good to surrender that. And perhaps even it's in the surrendering that Jesus reminds me that my energy and the life that comes from that cup of coffee is actually, he promises it, it's so much more than that, like 28 ounces in the morning, you know, or whatever it is. So a couple things. We're going to start to turn the corner and wrap up. So Lent, 40 days of entering the desert with Jesus. I want to say this. In the church, one of the beauties and one thing I love about the church is that nobody enters the desert alone. Like, we get to do that as a community. Nobody's flying solo here. And so we're all struggling together. We're all fasting together. And the beauty of this is we're all feasting together. And so one of the things I love about Chad, and I mean, really, it's the leadership team, too, that have, like, brought this whole thing together as well, is that they've been really intentional about going, okay, then if this is true, if for 40 days we want to hold these things out and let Jesus address them, how might we put some things in place that help bring us together as a community to experience this to such a degree that when Easter comes, we are ready, we're prepared to celebrate the empty tomb. And here's a couple of things that we're going to be doing as a church. And I'm going to be around. You guys don't even get rid of me for the next few weeks. I won't be up here as much, which is probably a good thing for you. You guys are like, bring back Chad. But a few things that you'll get to be doing, or that we'll get to be doing as a community here. Number one, Lent always starts on Ash Wednesday. And you guys, I'm sure, have seen some of the people that like walk around this time of year, and there's that one day where all of a sudden they have the black smudges of ash on their foreheads. Ash Wednesday always kicks off Lent. And Ash Wednesday is basically where they've taken, the church has taken the palm branches from last year's Easter. And at this point, time in the year, they become dead and they burn them and they create ashes. And then it's out of those ashes that's mixed with oil that the pastor, or in some cases the priest, whoever it is, puts a cross on our forehead and reminds us that from dust we have come and to dust we will return. And it's a pretty cool image. Like, some people tend to think like the church isn't a place for artists and artisans, but I think there's so much beauty in this and so much art in this. It's amazing. But Ash Wednesday is basically, it's the most inclusive day on the church calendar because it's the one thing that unites us with all of humanity and anything living, is that that we are finite beings, that we will die someday. From dust we have come, and to dust we will return. And it's that day that we really look death in the face, and we acknowledge that it will be a part of our story. And so that's Ash Wednesday. And so one of the things that we're going to do as a community together is we're going to go to an Ash Wednesday service. And I think the information is up here. And that's this Wednesday, which also happens to be Valentine's Day, right? Which is really great. Maybe you'll get a heart on your forehead instead of a cross. But I want you guys to put this on your calendars. February 14th, that's this Wednesday at 7 p.m., we're going to meet at First Salem Church, which is, they're the building that hosts our church. We have just a small church community, and we use space there on Saturday nights. But it's really cool, again, because nobody enters the wilderness by themselves in the church. It's going to be First Salem, which is a little community. It's going to be New Life. It's going to be Wheatland Mission, which is where I go, another small community. It's going to be Hilltop Urban Church. And we're going to come together as one body. Like, think about that. We're coming together to start Lent together with Ash Wednesday. So it'll be about a 45-minute service. It's not going to be super long. And the kids are welcome to come and encouraged to come. And again, you'll hear more about Ash Wednesday then and what it is. But it's especially if this challenges you, especially if this is something that you're like, I don't know, I would say come. Just see it and experience it and decide for yourself if it could be helpful. But again, we get to do this together. So this will be one of the ways, or this will be the way that we start off the Lenten season. Number two, we have a Lenten guide that we've put together. And it's basically, it's got devotions for once a week, but then it also has scriptural reading, scriptural reading throughout, for each day throughout Lent as well. And there's a lot of information in there to help you get caught up. So if you have questions about Ash Wednesday again, you know, there's a section in there that talks about what is Ash Wednesday and even Fat Tuesday, like Mardi Gras. How does that fit into all this? That's a great question. You'll need to read the guide because I'm not going to stand up here and tell you about it for the next 10 minutes because we all want to hear about Mardi Gras. Well, how does that fit into this? We talk about Lent a little bit more. And then one of the cool things about the guide that we put together this year is like Zan and David and Amber and myself and a few people from Wheatland have and Terry have all put together devotionals that you'll read through on Sundays and read through maybe together as a family. And then along with those, there's a set of scripture verses that you get to read. And then the weeks are set up to where Monday through Wednesday, it's like a reflection on that on Sundays, scriptures, and on Sundays devotion. And then Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, it's a look ahead at the scriptures, at the theme for the next week. It's really, really cool. So you'll want to get one of these. It'll be posted. It'll be posted on the webpage. Yeah, it's posted on the webpage already. So Jerry is all over that. But it will be available for you guys to download and follow. And I encourage you to follow it with us because, again, we're doing it together. I'm really excited about that. So that's the guide. And then if you're not a part of the family group that's on Facebook, we want you to go ahead and sign up for that today because as part of the Lenten season, we are going to be posting different questions about to help you process what's going on. We're going to be posting stories and different things that people are experiencing as they're going along with it, and lots of interactions and stuff like that. So again, we want to invite you to join the Facebook family group by signing up today before you leave so that, again, it's going to be one of those big things that pulls us together throughout the whole season. So that's Lent and 40 days of fasting. And that's Ash Wednesday, and that's the guide. And one of the things that I thought was really cool that we're going to go ahead and close with today is communion. Again, this may actually seem out of place, but as we start talking about Lent and we start talking about fasting again, fasting always goes hands in hand with feasting. And the beauty of this is that we get to do all this and experience all this on this side of Easter joy. And so as we take communion and as we celebrate communion, what we're celebrating is Jesus' death on the cross the blood that was shed for us and the bread that represents the body that was broken. But we're also celebrating it with the fact that the tomb was empty. And so encompassed in just this little act of walking to these stations and taking the bread and eating it and drinking the juice, in this little act, we get to celebrate the entire Christian story. It's almost like celebrating the entire Christian calendar. It's all that we profess and proclaim, that his death was enough, that we can look and be honest about the darkness within, because we also know that we don't have to deal with it. It's not on us. We don't trust ourselves with it, but we do trust Jesus, and we're following a king who cares about us desperately. And so I'm going to invite everybody. I'm going to invite the band up to come on up. And we're just going to have a time, maybe of reflection. It'll be a good thing to think about. Again, maybe this is the first time you've heard about fasting. To consider what it is in your life that might be a little off balance. And then whenever you're ready, we want you to go on up to the stations. And I love that communion is being served by our people here, because it's, again, it's through the church that we get to experience Christ, you know? And so whenever you're ready, just come on up, and then we'll close with our Lenten song. Let me pray. Father, we love you because you first loved us, and we're thankful that we can have a conversation like this about the struggles and the challenges that we face. Lord, knowing that you've already conquered death, knowing that you've already defeated darkness. And so as we take communion today, Lord, we celebrate that. And we celebrate that with thankful hearts, hearts of hope, and hearts of joy. And we do these things in Jesus' name.